Boston Mayor Martin Walsh last week announced that he was bringing on the firm run by retired General Stanley McChrystal to oversee the city's emergency response to the coronavirus pandemic as cases rise in Boston. McChrystal is a retired four-star Army general who is best known for leading the Joint Special Operations Command in the 2000s and commanding the U.S. forces in Afghanistan. For the next 2 months, the team at the McChrystal Group will focus on the coordination of city agencies, integrating their response plans, and ensuring effective and transparent communication of those plans to city residents. McChrystal's advice on how to lead the nation through the coronavirus pandemic is: instill confidence, tell the truth, be unified, and fight it like a war. It is a great pleasure to welcome General Stanley McChrystal to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us, General.
Thanks for having me.
Very nice to have you on the program. So, as I just read, your advice is: instill confidence, tell the truth, be unified, and fight it like a war. On a national level, how are we doing on those four fronts?
Well, we could do better. To be honest, when you see a community like Boston under Mayor Walsh pulling the elements together, it's pretty heartening. But the danger of a national effort being separated into 50 separate states and in some cases into municipalities who feel like they've got to fight this alone, it's pretty dangerous. And in the military, what you always try to do to defeat your enemy is break them up into small groups and defeat them piecemeal. And the way you lose a war is to break yourself up and not be coordinated and not get the synergy of people working together. So I think at the national level, that should be our major focus, to get everybody's mind around this, but then also to bring the efforts into better synergy.
You make the point, sir, that that this time that we're in and what we're facing is very similar to, it reminds you of the early months of fighting Al-Qaeda in Iraq. Give us a sense of those similarities and what we can learn from what was done there in this fight.
Absolutely. When we first ran into Al-Qaeda in Iraq, which emerged in 2003, it was related to big Iraq, but it was a separate independent entity and had completely different DNA. It was very, very amorphous. It was viral in nature. It constantly adapted. It learned quickly, and it was very, very lethal. Sounds pretty familiar to COVID-19.
Right.
And the challenge is we were purpose-built from years back to be a counterterrorist force that was very precise, almost elegantly so, but designed to operate deliberately on a very slow cadence. And we ran into the requirement to operate dispersed across 27 countries simultaneously, but to be effective against this amorphous viral enemy, to be able to synchronize our efforts every 24 hours because the work moved that fast. So suddenly we had to create, instead of a small elite team, we had to create a big network that thought like a human brain, that came together in real time and could focus all these efforts and constantly change. I think that's what the pandemic is showing us. It's going to run on its time scale. It's going to go where it wants to go. We've got to be aggressive in our ability to respond to it.
You have written in an op-ed that is on CNN's website, defeating a networked problem like the coronavirus demands a similar networked response. Any organization will fall behind and ultimately fail if it relies solely on conventional bureaucracy and the slow sharing of information. A twofold question. One, give us a sense of how this particular problem is networked, and then also how you are seeing, because I think many will say we are seeing a very slow sharing of information, and how we change that course.
Sure. This pandemic is almost by definition networked. We watch how it is spread. It's spread using the things that we created: airlines, cruise ships, the travel of people, the interaction between human beings. We formed the network that this pandemic, COVID-19, spreads on, which is ironic, but very, very true. Which means that we have got to use those same ability to network ourselves to respond to it. First, we've got to be able to mass critical resources the brain power of our scientists, the ability to produce equipment we need, PPE, ventilators, those kinds of things, and then move them to where they're needed, because where they're needed will change over time. It will wax and wane in different places. We can't even afford to fight this as nations. We have to fight it globally, because, in fact, the pandemic doesn't recognize national borders any more than it does state borders.
So what we're hearing on a national level in some places is that there are not enough tests. There are people who have a difficulty getting the materials and the equipment that you just mentioned. However, there others will say, and this has been a case during the national briefings from the White House and the task force, that there are however many tests at this location, there are however many tests at that location that are not being used, as you just indicated, but they have to be in the place where you actually need them. So I guess, again, I have two questions. One is, well, how did they get to the wrong place in the first place? But also, then, how do we then move them and make sure that that's happening and it doesn't happen again?
Yeah, I think the first part is any bureaucracy that is siloed, people will be trying to do a good job, but they'll do with a narrow field of view, and they will put things where they think they need them, and they won't have a wider view. So it's pretty easy for hardworking, good people to create an apparatus that is very ineffective for the problem we see, because not many people have the visibility of the entire problem in real time. So that's a big issue. How do you fix that? You've got to start creating connections that don't really exist on day-to-day. They probably should, but if we think about it, those things which link the states, which link the cities together, which push information in real time that inform people, you'd think they would exist, but look at the different responses in different cities. In fact, one governor yesterday said he had just heard about the fact that people who are not symptomatic could in fact transmit the disease. That kind of understanding needs to be pumping across so that we're fighting a single coherent effort.
So let's look at your situation of the work that you're doing in Boston and just say, okay, so are there challenges that you are dealing with that are unique to Boston? Or because obviously you are not only fighting this in Boston, but you are, like the rest of the world, fighting this. So how do you do it for a municipality as well as look out and be understanding of the greater effort as well?
Absolutely. I'd say first, Boston is blessed with a very competent team. And that team has been prepared for different kinds of problems, natural disasters, et cetera. But this is different. So bringing them together for a pandemic required some new efforts on their part, build up some new capabilities and whatnot, and they are doing that very effectively. It would be far more effective in the big picture if, in fact, states and other cities were linked with similar efforts and they were connected in real time. Certainly, there is some connectivity. One mayor can call another, a governor can call another. Right. But the ability in real time, I would propose a network of fusion cells across the nation which bring information together, pump it out where it's needed, constantly update the situation, not just in a medical sense, not just tracking the number of cases, but all things like PPE, movement of people and whatnot, would be extremely helpful.
You seem to me rather unflappable, but I am interested just in over the past two or three days of what has frustrated you in this effort.
Yeah, I probably, like most Americans, when I see the right answer provided by medical experts who say we need to do a lockdown of people, we've got to get in front of this or we are going to be trying to play catch up, and then we don't do that. That frustrates me, because it's pretty clear to me that this is a national effort that only works if it's done nationally. If one part of the country doesn't do one thing and the COVID virus is allowed to get a better foothold there and then move, we're all going to struggle harder. So I think we need to be a little bit more realistic with ourselves, a lot more realistic with ourselves as a nation. Make hard decisions and get this done.
In the op-ed that I referenced earlier, you talk about how you have to set realistic goals, and you note that this is not business as usual. However, you say that we can still succeed. Through that, the leader has to be brutally honest about what is achievable in the coming weeks and months. Look, we've heard everything in the past 10 days, from we can open up back on Easter and be raring to go, to now that we will have again a remain in place through the end of April. I asked the question because I know part of what you were saying in that editorial is also to set realistic goals and to revise targets, to revise timelines. And I guess I'm interested in that, the gray area in between of what is realistic and setting a realistic goal, to also have the power of that revision of the targets and timelines if necessary.
Yeah, I think the foundation of this is being candid with the people that you lead. Tell them the truth as best you know it, but then tell them with the humility to say, the truth changes, information gets updated, and I'm going to tell you what I think at each point. So it's not a contradiction, it's an evolution of the situation, and I will communicate that to you. If we think about getting people mobilized against something like this, if you say, okay, this is not a big problem, we can solve it, you think you're inspiring confidence and that they will go. But then when it's not an easy problem, in fact, what you do is you build skepticism. If you think what Franklin Roosevelt did when he took over in the beginning of 1933, the nation was in the depth of the Depression. It had been almost 2.5 years in the Depression. He didn't promise a fix. He said, we are going to fix this. We are going to take a number of actions, some of which will work, some of which will not work. Those that work will do more. Those that don't work will stop. We are going to get ourselves through it. He communicated confidence in the outcome, but he didn't try to tell them it would be easier than, in fact, it actually was going to be.
General, you are just that, a general. And as I mentioned in the beginning, you say that part of your advice is to fight this like a war. Is there a point where that analogy changes, where there is, because of many factors, science, the spread, the what is behind it, that analogy starts to not fall apart exactly, but you have to shift your thinking of it, of not so much as a war, but something that has to be handled and managed?
Yeah, it's a great question. First, I'd say you need to think of war in a broad sense. War is a struggle typically between nation states, and it brings every part of national effort together, not just soldiers on the battlefield, but economics, information, all the things that we have to bring upon the problem. So from that standpoint, I think COVID-19 should be fought like a war. Everything that is needed to do, we must mobilize and do. Your point, however, over time, is not every war is fought with a huge offensive every week. In fact, sometimes you do manage the problem, and as this is likely to wax and wane over time, it will go down. We may think, all right, we're doing great, but we're going to have to be disciplined enough as a society to know that until there is an effective vaccine, then we are going to have likely outbreaks again, and we're going to have to deal with those effectively, not act surprised, not go back to where we were and get caught flat-footed, but to be ready and, as you well describe it, manage it.
Because what we're being told, of course, and you just alluded to this, but that, as Dr. Fauci and others have told us, this can be but just one round. And whatever we bring under control of whatever that is, then we can see this ramp back up. We obviously will know more if it comes back in the fall or later, but it's still another war, right? It's a different battle.
Well, that's exactly right. And the other thing I'd say to people is this is not going to be the last crisis we ever face. The next one may not be a pandemic, it may be something different. But in a globalized world, something that happens in one place almost always has a ripple effect in other places. And so the reality is, I think it's a society, and of course, individual organizations need to start thinking about how they build a resiliency into their structure, into their culture, into their approach to problem solving that allows them to respond to things that we might want to claim are black swan, but in fact, we can predict another crisis is going to come. We just don't know what it's going to be.
Do you feel that you have figured out how to make politicians think like a general?
No, but if you figure it out, you let me know. And I don't think we want politicians to think like generals, and I'm not sure, you know, that generals have all the answers, but I've got a lot of scar tissue from experiences. And I've come to believe that nobody wins anything alone. You'll only do it as a team. The bigger your team is, the better you do.
General Stanley McChrystal commanded forces in Afghanistan and Iraq and founded the McChrystal Group. He is currently working with the city of Boston in their coronavirus response. General McChrystal, I thank you very much for being with us. And I know your time is precious, and I thank you very much for spending it with us.
You're kind to have me on. Take care.
I appreciate it. Thank you. Again, General Stanley McChrystal. You can hear this interview again by going to wamc.org/roundtable.